Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. When today's guest, filmmaker Dawn Porter, was in Mississippi working on a film about public defenders in the South, she learned that there's only one clinic offering abortions in the entire state. She keeps up with the news, but she had no idea that so many clinics were closing. So she decided to interview clinic workers, doctors, and patients in Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas. And they tell their story in her new documentary, Trapped. Dawn Porter's film unravels the troubling implications of a new wave of laws on abortion providers designed to regulate them out of existence. They're targeted regulations of abortion providers, or TRAP laws. In Texas, these laws require clinics to meet ambulatory surgical center standards, for example, and doctors to obtain admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. These seemingly innocuous regulations have forced dozens of clinics to close. Texas's TRAP law is called HB2, and Amy Hackstrom Miller, the founder and CEO of Whole Woman's Health, it's a group of 8 clinics in 5 states, including Texas, says HB2 was enough to crumble the service industry completely. Amy Hackstrom Miller is the lead plaintiff in a legal challenge to HB2, which was heard by the Supreme Court in March. A decision in one of the most important abortion cases since Roe v. Wade is expected next month. If the Supreme Court upholds HB2, clinics in Texas will continue to close, and states across the country will be free to enact similar laws. In Trapped, we meet Amy Hackstrom Miller and other clinic workers who are fighting to keep abortions safe and legal for millions of American women and girls. Many of these girls and women are poor and uninsured. Today, we are joined by Dawn Porter, an award-winning filmmaker. Her documentary, Trapped, premiered at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival. It won the Special Jury Award for Social Impact Filmmaking, and Trapped will air on PBS's Independent Lens on June 20th at 10 p.m. And Dawn Porter joins me in studio. Hi, Dawn. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, it's great to have you back. And since you were on the show, well, since January, the film Trapped has been screened 200 times in communities across the country. These are community screenings.
Yeah, we are so thrilled with the response. We worked really hard. We were thrilled to get into Sundance. Obviously, it's a prestigious festival, but it also meant that our film could be out and in communities and being seen by folks right as at this very important time in the news. So we embarked on kind of a unique filmmaker distribution strategy. We had a 22-city theatrical tour, so we were in theaters across the country, but we also made it available to community groups. And so we've had 200 and counting, and we're really looking forward to being on Independent Lens in June and having a national broadcast.
You interviewed a lot of clinic workers and doctors, and you have traveled with some of these clinic workers to these screenings across the country. I bet you've got so many amazing stories, meeting people sharing stories with you. What really stands out for you?
You know, what stands out the most is what the support means for the clinic workers. People are coming to the film, and they have a really emotional response. And I think when I was making it, I was so focused on the politics. It wasn't that I missed the emotion, but I wasn't. I was a little bit surprised at the intensity of the emotion in the audience. People have shared their abortion stories. They have shared how important it was that a clinic was open. But probably, it's hard to say what the most gratifying thing is because there have been a lot of things that have been so positive. But one of the most gratifying, for sure, is how the clinic workers feel supported. I mean, they are really isolated in the states where they practice, in Alabama, Mississippi, and some places in Texas. And when they get a standing ovation, when people are coming up, they've gotten letters. So I was recently in Huntsville, and they showed me a letter they'd gotten just from a viewer, and who said, you know, keep up the good work. They don't get mail like that. So that kind of response, I think, has helped them to keep going. And, you know, they need it. I mean, Alabama just last week passed the law that says a clinic cannot be 2,000 feet from a school, and the governor signed it. So that is now the law in Alabama, unless and until it is challenged. That will close 2 of the 3 clinics in the state that perform surgical abortions. So, you know, this fight is far from over. Even with a pending Supreme Court case, the state of Alabama continues its assault on reproductive rights.
Luckily, we don't have trap laws here in California, and so therefore a lot of people don't know what they are. We hear these huge numbers by the Guttmacher Institute that states have adopted 288 restrictions just since the 2010 midterm elections, but it's hard to wrap your head around that. What does that mean exactly? And what's amazing about your film is you see how it plays out on the ground. So for people who aren't familiar with these trap laws, give us an overview.
Yeah, TRAP is an acronym that stands for Targeted Regulation of Abortion Providers. So the best way to understand it is if you've ever visited a dermatologist or had a colonoscopy or some other outpatient, you know, outpatient really just means not in hospital. The overwhelming number of abortions in America are not happening in hospitals. They're happening in outpatient clinics, which makes it easy for health departments to target these clinics for regulations that don't apply to other outpatient doctors. So examples of laws that we call trap laws are laws that you have to widen your hallway by 3 inches. They have to have negative pressure ventilation systems. In Texas, you're required to have a nurse anesthesiologist, even if the patient isn't undergoing any anesthesia. You're required to have undue record keeping. But the most effective law has been requiring doctors to have admitting privileges to local hospitals. While that sounds like a very reasonable thing to happen, what is actually happening in practice is that the hospitals won't grant those privileges. So it's this catch-22. The state requires you to have privileges that the hospitals won't grant. And that in and of itself has caused a crisis in access to abortion services in the South, but also across the country.
In the film, you interview Marva Sadler, who's Director of Clinical Services for Whole Women's Health in San Antonio, and she gives you a tour of this ambulatory center. And it's basically an operating room that is ready for open-heart surgery. The walls are covered with medical dispensers and various machines. And she says to you, we cannot have any freestanding oxygen machines. The suction has to be in the wall, and that is for every big pre-op. I don't know that we've ever used any of these things on the wall in this clinic ever. And then there's the pharmacy. The drugs, she says, always expire because they never use them. And to replace those drugs every month, they spend $1,100 throwing out expired drugs and replacing them.
You know, there's a healthcare crisis in this country, and Texas is a state that has very poor health outcomes for its citizens. So one of the most infuriating things about these laws is this is actually a beautiful medical delivery service that is essentially not being used. It is unnecessary waste. So for conservative Republicans who are against waste in government, it's quite ironic that medicine is literally being thrown away when those kinds of resources are so deeply needed across this country, but in places like Texas, Alabama, and Mississippi and Louisiana in particular.
And you tried to get interviews with politicians to ask them about this.
I did. I wrote to the governors. We called the governors. We even tried. We had a person who had a personal connection with the governor who called an aide who said, listen, you can tape the interview yourself. You know, we will tell you the topics we want to cover. And I couldn't get anybody to talk, you know, to me. But, you know, the politicians who are passing these laws are quite clear about their intent. And that's what makes this Supreme Court case so, so interesting. The governor of Alabama, the governor of Mississippi are on record saying they want abortion to be eliminated in their states. And so they are not pretending that these laws, they say they're for health and safety, but they also say they want to make abortion difficult to access.
You do have a clip from Governor Rick Perry in your film, and we're going to play a clip. We're going to play the trailer. Actually, let's get that ready. So you weren't able to interview the politicians, but you were able to find footage.
Yeah, this is a big voting issue in these states. So Governor Rick Perry you know, says that he wants to make abortion more difficult. The governor in Mississippi says he wants to make it a thing of the past. The governor in Alabama, who has just signed this week more anti-choice legislation, you know, made similar comments. So the legal question is really fascinating. It's, can a state pass laws that actually targets what is now a constitutional right?
So let's talk about the significance of HB 2 and the Supreme Court decision that's going to come down next month. The Supreme Court heard the case in March, and we're hoping, a lot of the clinics say that they expect a decision next month.
So the decision, because it is probably one of the most significant abortion or reproductive rights decisions in the past several decades, usually decisions of that import are announced very near the court's end of term, which this year is the end of June, June 27th, we think. So we, you know, there's a significant question with Justice Scalia's passing. We could have a 4-4 decision. In that case, the lower court ruling would stand. In this case, that's the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which covers Texas and also Mississippi. And that would mean that the clinics in Texas will close. There's about 19 clinics open. They would go down to about 9.
And 19 clinics from 44.
From 44.
Right? So after this passed, it went from 44 to about 19.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, and this doesn't get much attention, but because these clinics have closed, when you're talking about South Texas, you have to drive sometimes 3 or 4 hours. And according to research from the Texas Policy Evaluation Project, by December 2015, the wait times at 4 clinics in Dallas and Fort Worth were as long as 28 days, forcing women to wait so long they might be pushed from the first trimester of pregnancy to the second trimester.
That is so hugely important to understand that when clinics close, Texas is an enormous state. It is 900 miles tip to tip. So when you close, the clinics that are remaining are largely clustered in large urban areas. If you live outside of a major metropolitan center in Texas, you're driving an hour or more. Plus, remember, you have to have a waiting period, so people are forced to spend the night. But the wait times in the open clinics have just increasingly lengthened. And when abortion is a procedure that can possibly get more complicated as the weeks go on. So if you are concerned about women's health, why would you push the procedure into a more expensive, potentially more complicated second trimester procedure when in the first trimester, it's one of the safest outpatient medical procedures that we have?
And the clinic closures are also forcing women to travel hundreds of miles. They have to spend extra money on bus, plane tickets. Sometimes they have to leave the state because if they're already in a second trimester, they cannot wait 28 days.
That's right. Texas has a limit of 20 weeks. So think about what you just said. People have to wait until they realize they're pregnant, which can be 5-6 weeks. Then if you have to wait another 3-4 weeks, you're pushing into second trimester if you can get an appointment.
Today we're speaking with Dawn Porter. She's an award-winning filmmaker. Her documentary Trapped looks at what happens when abortion clinics either close or are being threatened with closure. And let's hear part of the trailer from the documentary Trapped.
In Texas today, Governor Rick Perry signed
in Alabama, a committee
Mississippi could soon begin the fight to eliminate abortion.
Abortion.
Women are going to have abortions. It's just that they are not going to be safe and legal.
The legislature passed a bill that they knew that we could not comply with. And that was the function of the bill. The function is a trap.
In the past 3 years, there have been hundreds of restrictions passed, more than in the past decade.
These rules don't add anything to the safety of women.
This is our pharmacy. The drugs always expire because we never use them. I don't know that we've ever used any of these things in this clinic ever.
They chop away piecemeal at reproductive rights.
There's a 2 or 3 week waiting list for a procedure where time is of the essence.
I remember getting a call once from a patient. She said, "What if I tell you what I have in my kitchen cabinet and you tell me what I can do?"
We've forgotten what this country is about. Dignity's given of God.
I have a hard time forgiving myself.
I want women to talk to each other, to quit shaming each other. I want people to quit shaming women over abortion, period.
And that is the trailer from Trapped, the documentary that looks at what happens when clinics that provide abortions shut down or are threatened with closure. Dawn Porter made the film Trapped. It debuted at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival, and it won the Special Jury Award for Social Impact Filmmaking. Trapped will air on PBS's Independent Lens June 20th at 10 p.m., and I hope you can see this important film. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about what is happening across this country? Did you know that in Texas, there are parental notification laws on the books for girls under the age of 18? And there was, I forgot his name, but this wealthy man in Southern California tried to pass similar legislation in California. He put it on the ballot. On the ballot a number of times, but it was always voted down. And a lot of people say, well, why not? The parents should be involved. But what about the girls who don't have a good relationship with parents or maybe have violence in the household?
Or the parent is incarcerated, right, or unknown. You know, I wish that for every family there were two loving parents involved. But that's just sadly not always the case. The other thing is, I do have to say, I was embedded in 6 clinics over 3 years, and I saw a lot of incest. And so requiring, and that is a real, it was shocking to me how many times those cases were there and were reported.
I mean, these are the things we don't like to talk about in this country, but can you tell us more about that? I mean, the families that were involved, what happened to these girls?
One thing that was so surprising to me was seeing how young some of the people coming in were. So a number of 13-year-olds, number like 12, the youngest person somebody told me about was 11. When you think about it, though, young people who, particularly if they have no sex education, don't necessarily understand the mechanics of sex or what a pregnancy will be. So often they're presenting much later because they've never had a period, or they're just starting to get their period and their period's irregular. On more than one occasion, the physician let us know that these were not things that we could film, but that they had had to, that the girl had indicated to the physician that the father was her father.
Mm.
So, the clinics are required by law and they do report. But there are, thank goodness that there was a clinic that person could go to have a responsible adult who could intervene.
The one story that really got me in your film was about a 13-year-old rape victim who was brought to San Antonio, Texas. She's from McAllen, and it was a 4-hour journey. But in order to help this 13-year-old, who was 20 weeks and 5 days pregnant, a nurse anesthetist was needed. And because these laws are so unpredictable, there's only one in the whole state. And that nurse was not available to put this young girl to sleep.
Yeah, it's really some of the most heartbreaking situations when you see. McAllen is very far south in Texas on the border of Mexico. And that clinic has opened and closed and opened and closed. And so during a period when it was not available, they referred that young woman to San Antonio. She made that journey and there was not staffing available that is required by law. They referred her out of state to New Mexico, but Texas has a 20-week limit. So at 20 weeks, 5 days, she would have had 2 days to find a nurse and anesthesiologist. And as we just discussed with the waiting periods and trying to also, the clinics, there are not a lot of doctors that are doing abortions. And one of the things that, I tried to capture in the film is that you have doctors flying in from out of states. So you can imagine the scheduling nightmare. You may only have a doctor for 1 or 2 days a week at your clinic. And so if you don't get there on the right day, you can really be out of luck. So this young woman was referred to go to New Mexico, but the procedure was several thousand dollars. The clinic staff, it's not at liberty. They don't actually know what happened to her, but they couldn't tell me anyway for privacy reasons. But they were not hopeful that she would make it to New Mexico.
Right. In the film, Marva Sadler, the clinic worker, says, "We sentenced her to motherhood. What are the odds of her making that trip? It's just not likely."
Yeah. So, you know, that's the reality on the ground. And that's really what I wanted to show. I think often abortion is discussed, and I think the anti-choice community has effectively frame the argument around abortion in terms of its conception of morality instead of the real world conception of medicine. And these are decisions that should be made by doctors and patients and not politicians.
Dawn Porter made the documentary Trapped, which takes a look at what happens when clinics shut down or are threatened with closure. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about these regulations placed on providers and how they affect women and girls? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We talked a little bit about the parental notification laws, and June Ayers, the owner of Reproductive Health Services in Alabama, an amazing character in your film. I mean, every time someone calls in, she says, "Hey, baby, how you doing, baby?
I know.
Can you make it tomorrow, baby?" What she's actually going with girls to the courthouse.
Yeah, she spends a significant amount of time. There's a judicial bypass system in Alabama. So if a minor says that they cannot find their both parents. So we had one young woman who she wasn't in contact with her mother, and she needed to get a judicial bypass. So June will often accompany the young women into these closed door proceedings. The state of Alabama has a law that the fetus can be represented, so they can appoint a lawyer to the fetus. And in a mini trial, the judge examines the young woman and questions her. And the lawyer for the fetus can also question her.
And in some cases, judges are elected. And I'm hearing that some judges are running on platforms to never give a girl a judicial bypass. This is happening in Texas for sure.
You know, I hadn't heard that. I'm not surprised. Sadly, I'm not surprised. I do wish that some of the legislators who are running on these extreme positions would spend a day in one of these judicial bypass courts. In Alabama, the chief judge of the Alabama Supreme Court is a man named Roy Moore, who is fervently anti-choice, has funded litigation for, you know, court fees for anti-choice protesters, regularly addresses Operation Rescue. So this is the chief judge of the Supreme Court. His job is to rule and write the administrative laws governing that court.
Let's talk. We have just a minute before break, but we'll talk about this before and after break. The anti-abortion group called Americans United for Life is developing a lot of this model legislation. What did you learn about this group?
You know, this was one of the most surprising findings. While my editor and I were working, she kept saying, her name's Sari Gilman, she's a brilliant editor. She said, you know, this just feels coordinated because we were seeing the same exact language in state after state after state. And, you know, we determined that there's a group, Americans United for Life. They are much like the Koch brothers or, you know, they write model laws. They pass them around to sympathetic state legislators. And that's why, you know, in the open, you discussed how these laws have been passed since 2010. And that's not accidental. In 2010, there was a Republican conservative Tea Party takeover of state House legislators. And one of the number one priorities for many of these people was to pass this anti-choice legislation drafted by Americans United for Life.
And a lot of these politicians got funding directly from the Koch network. So there's a connection there. We'll talk more about that group after a break. Today, we're speaking with Dawn Porter. She made the documentary Trapped. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
And we are going to have just a brief break in this critical conversation between Rose Aguilar and Dawn Porter. I'm Matt Martin here with Laura Flynn, producer of Your Call, asking for your support to keep this kind of conversation going. We're talking about a constitutionally protected medical procedure and the threats to it. That is what you support, this kind of conversation. When you make a call, 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or click at kalw.org.
And you can show your support for Your Call prioritizing women and girls' rights, and you can do that by calling 800-525-9917. Again, that's 800-525-9917, or you can visit our website, kalw.org, and click donate.
800-525-9917, kalw.org. We are aiming to make this the last day of our membership campaign. So we have in this hour our biggest challenge for Your Call so far, and that is to get 30 people to support this station during this hour. 30 people. And if that happens, we have three generous listeners who are going to put up an additional $2,250 for local public radio. That is big as we press toward our goal, but this is a big challenge. It's a big day. We need your support. Please come through at 800-525-9917 or kalw.org.
And you can help us do that. And on Your Call, we consistently cover abortion when few will even discuss it. So support Your Call today by making a call at 800-525-9917. Again, that's 800-525-9917 or visit klw.org and click donate.
800-525-9917. Thank you for the people who are honoring and supporting this work. Thank you for joining with us to keep this independent resource on the air. 800-525-9917 or you can click at kalw.org. We are pressing toward our goal for this campaign. Every single call counts. You make a difference when you click or call kalw.org or 800-525-9917.
Again, if you missed it, it's 800-525-9917, or you can visit kalw.org and click donate.
Thank you for your support.
And today on Your Call, Dawn Porter joins us. Her new documentary is Trapped. It takes a look at what happens when clinics that provide abortions shut down or are threatened with closure. Dawn traveled to Texas, Alabama, and Mississippi to interview clinic workers, lawyers, advocates, and patients. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have for Dawn about what she found in these clinics? She spent 3 years, she was embedded, as she said, in six clinics in 3 years. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. I would especially love to hear from those of you who fought so hard for these rights in the 60s and the 70s. And I have seen signs at rallies saying, "Why am I still fighting this?" So what are your thoughts on this? How do you make sense of what we're facing right now? And where do you see this going? 866-798-8255. So before the break, Dawn, we were talking about this anti-abortion advocacy group called Americans United for Life, and they're developing this model legislation. Their bills have become law in about 23 states so far. What else did you learn about this group?
Americans United Life came into being expressly to overturn Roe v. Wade. That was so when Roe v. Wade was enacted in 1973, when the Supreme Court made that landmark decision, Americans United for Life came together. And so they tried unsuccessfully over the next decade to just overturn Roe. And that didn't work. Where their first kind of real big inroads were made in the 1993 Casey decision, which allowed Roe v. Wade said you cannot regulate abortion at the state level in the first trimester. End of story, bright line. The Casey decision in 1993 said, well, you can regulate abortion if it's for the health and safety of the mother. And that was really the wedge that allowed, you know, fast forward 20 years to where we are today. That is the hook on which all of these state legislators are writing this law, these laws. So they will say that the laws are for health and safety of women, although there is no evidence. There's literally no evidence. It is one of the most striking things I have ever seen in the Supreme Court argument. Particularly the female justices were asking the Texas Solicitor General, can you point to a woman that has been helped by these laws? And there wasn't an example that was provided. So Americans United for Life, unable to overturn Roe straight out, has started this more effective strategy of limiting access. So they do that in a number of ways. The admitting privileges laws is one of their most successful. bans on abortion. So you may have seen across the country there are potential bans at 6 weeks. Those were struck down. At 11 weeks, those were struck down. 20 weeks, those have been upheld in different places. So once you start saying abortion is not available after 20 weeks, you limit the number of, you limit choice for women. The 80% of abortions happen in the first trimester, so the vast majority of women are not facing that late-term situation. But for people who are in a late-term situation, there's usually a fetal anomaly or there's some other reason why the person is facing such a late-term choice. So those laws are particularly devastating for people. There's a lovely and really important film, After Tiller, that dealt with the late-term abortion discussion.
The New York Times reported on March 5th that during oral arguments before the Supreme Court case, Justice Elena Kagan noted that she was struck by the close relationship between abortion restrictions in Texas and the closing of clinics. She said, quote, "It's almost like the perfect controlled experiment as to the effect of the law, isn't it? It's like you put the law into effect, 12 clinics closed. You take the law out of effect, they reopen," end quote.
And, you know, the Texas Solicitor General, in addressing that argument by Justice Kagan, maintained that there was no impact on the law and the closure of the clinics, that it was some great coincidence. They also pointed to the fact that Planned Parenthood was able to open clinics. I think that people need to carefully evaluate and look, but the overwhelming amount of truthful evidence is that clinic closures, as you can imagine, have not only caused longer waits, but also more women turning to self-abortion.
Okay, so since you brought that up, let's talk about self-abortion, because one of the women in the film goes online to try to find herbs, but then she got scared.
This is one of the things that was also so shocking to me, is women admitting and seeing people who are, you know, people really desperate who are looking for anything that's possible. So, this woman it was so brave of her to tell her story. She's older. She's actually a nurse. So she was like, I know the medical risks of, ordering on the internet. But she was so desperate that she ordered these drugs and really thought seriously about taking them until she was able to find a clinic. The clinic had been closed and reopened, and she was able to get to that clinic before she was past the time of bans.
And she's also a mother.
She's also a mother. She was in school. She's like everybody. We all have lives, and, there's the most personal and private decision you can make is when and whether to parent. She made the decision that was right for her family.
In March, Seth Stevens Davidowitz, an economist, published an op-ed in the New York Times about his findings, looking at a correlation between Google searches for how to have a miscarriage and how to self-abort. He writes, there were tens of thousands of searches looking into abortion by herbs like parsley or vitamin C. There were 4,000 searches looking for directions on coat hanger abortions, including 1,300 for the exact phrase, how to do a coat hanger abortion.
I mean, that's, there's a study that came out recently. I can't remember if it's a British journal, but that noted that there is no correlation between a reduction in the number of abortions and states that have these laws. So, what we're finding is if you actually want to decrease abortions, the most effective way to do that is to have birth control available and accessible. A number of these states that are passing trap laws are also rejecting the Medicaid expansion because they oppose the Affordable Care Act. If, people had access to contraception, that would seem a smart way to try and decrease unplanned pregnancy.
And this isn't surprising, but it's important to point out that 8 of the 10 states with the highest search rates on Google for self-induced abortions are considered by the Guttmacher Institute to be hostile or very hostile to abortion, None of the 10 states with the lowest search rates for self-induced abortion are in either category.
You know, a lot what happens to a number of women is abortion, you know, as you mentioned, is not something a lot of people are thinking about unless they have a personal need or there's a friend or a family member who has a need. And so what is happening is people, you know, find themselves with an unplanned pregnancy. They search for clinics and they find that there are none. There are five or six states in America with one abortion clinic in the entire state. So, you know, access is really limited in those places, but it's also limited in places like Texas. In Alabama, as I said, there are three.
And we haven't really talked about this because these laws are so extreme. In Texas, you have to have parental consent for birth control pills, right? And then there's very little sex education.
You know, I think that this is part of the perfect storm of, you know, kind of boxing women and girls into a corner, is if you don't provide information about your reproductive system, you don't provide access to contraception. Essentially, it's a war on sex other than sex for procreation. And, you know, that is not something I think the government should be involved in.
We just got some breaking news, which I'm trying to find here, about an abortion law in Oklahoma. Oklahoma legislature passes bill that would criminalize abortion procedures except to save a mother's life.
Another trend that we see in this area is that states are, you know, we are in unprecedented times where once upon a time there was some kind of respect for the Supreme Court and for the laws of the land. But when you see legislators passing laws that have been declared unconstitutional repeatedly, you have to wonder about people who ask about respect for the sanctity of the Supreme Court and for the laws of America. That is a blatantly unconstitutional law that has no possibility of being upheld. And yet you see state legislators, rather than dealing with infrastructure, education, illness, you know, so many things that we are in desperate need of addressing, they're trying to outlaw abortion as public enemy number one. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to understand.
Well, according to CNN, the language in this Oklahoma bill, it says anyone who's found to have performed an abortion except in instances to save the life of the mother will be found guilty of a felony and can receive up to 3 years in prison. The bill is on its way to Governor Mary Fallon for approval. She has not decided whether she will sign the bill. Once she has the bill, she has 5 business days to decide if she's going to approve it. If she doesn't sign or veto the bill, it'll automatically become law.
All eyes on Oklahoma.
Today, we're speaking with Dawn Porter about her new documentary, Trapped, which looks at what happens when abortion clinics shut down or are threatened with closure. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I wanted to tell, you know, I was back in the old days fighting. And one of the things I did was make a little movie about abortion, trying to convince my Louisiana neighbors about, you know, why they should change their position. And in doing the research for that movie, I spoke to a doctor. I interviewed a doctor who explained what illegal abortion actually does. And you can hear me, right?
Yes, you're fine.
And what it does, if it's a coat hanger abortion, it traumatizes the body into, you know, into aborting. And if it's a lot of times people do what he calls mixing up a cocktail, which is household cleansers and fluids, and drinking that, and that makes, you know, that also traumatizes the body into expelling the fetus, into leaking amniotic fluid and then expelling the fetus. So this is not like a clean surgical abortion at all, which is harmless. These are things that cause liver and kidney damage for good, you know. and that's just the point that I wanted to make. This thing about Oklahoma, it's just horrifying. But I just wanted to explain if people are looking for the health of the woman, this is the health of the woman they're going to be throwing people back on. They're, you know, currently researching things on the internet, like you said.
I'm so happy that you brought that up. Judy, thank you so much for that call and for making a movie. I love fellow movie makers. But the, you know, a study in Texas that examined the impact of the Texas closure law, HB2, found an estimated 100,000 to 240,000 women in Texas alone tried to self-abort. One of the newer common ways to try and self-abort is to use what's called the abortion pill. When given in the first trimester under, you know, the supervision of a physician or with the proper protocol, it's an extremely safe and effective method. But when, you know, what we find is that women are not always given the proper information, they don't have it accessible, or they're not properly supervised. And so they will take often more than the prescribed regimen. They will begin to hemorrhage, which is a very violent shock to the body, as you mentioned. And they were showing up in emergency rooms in Texas. It is illegal to try and self-abort. So they were instructed to not give the physician the information that they had taken these drugs, which is also, you know, a health risk. If you cannot be honest with your physician about what medications you've taken, you can imagine, you know, the physicians trying to guess at what has caused somebody to spontaneously hemorrhage.
Well, thank you for calling in, Judy. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So we shared this breaking news about the Oklahoma State Legislature passing a bill that would criminalize abortion in the state, period. The governor has 5 days to make a decision on this, Governor Mary Fallon. And then on the 18th, yesterday, the New York Times has a piece. The South Carolina legislature passed a bill, this is yesterday, making it illegal for a woman to get an abortion at 20 weeks or more, even if she has been raped or is a victim of incest. The passage of the legislation is headed to Governor Nikki Haley's desk. It would make South Carolina the 17th state to approve such a ban.
You know, more Americans, Americans overwhelmingly poll and say that they are pro-choice in some circumstances. And yet you see these extremely conservative legislators passing these bills. So as we head into one of the most important elections, you know, in I can't even say how important the stakes are for this election. But, you know, this needs to be understood by people who are considering their presidential candidates, because it will, we are not only, of course, electing a president, but we are also electing all the down ballot people who are passing these laws.
I'm glad you mentioned this, and I wonder what your experience is like doing interviews for this film, because we hear consistently that this is one of the most divisive issues of our time. And yet, a Wall Street Journal NBC News poll in 2013 found that 7 in 10 Americans believe that Roe should stand, 70%. They said it was the largest percentage they've ever found. And when these extreme laws go to the people, not the politicians, even in conservative states like Colorado or Mississippi, they always go down.
You know, this is a real, I'm so, so glad you brought that up, because I think it's also a real issue for journalism. You have a very vocal minority of folks who are making these laws. And so that is not necessarily representing the will of the people, but the people have to speak. So, you know, we kind of call them the great silent majority. And that is one of the reasons why it was so important to me to try and get community screenings and having people understand you can't be silent. If you support a right to choose, you have to use your voice. You have to actually say that that's what you think. And you have to stand up for the health of women. It may not be a choice that you would make, but think about your neighbor, your daughter, your friend.
When you do interviews, do these stats come out that the majority of the country is actually pro-choice?
You know,
I mean, do they ask questions about this?
It was really interesting. One of the things that we would do when filming is, you know, if you can imagine, if you walk into an abortion clinic and there's a camera there, it can be disconcerting. So we would make announcements to people about what we were doing. There was a lot of there were so many people who had no idea about the political state and the assault on abortions in their states. And I think that, you know, that raises a point about what information is actually getting out to people. So we are having a really tough time getting the southern stations of the PBS network to show this film, or they're showing it at 3 a.m. Hmm. And so, you know, we're going to make a fuss about that, that, you know, there's this film has been rigorously fact-checked. This is something, you know, that deeply affects people not only across the country, but in those states in particular. So, you know, I think, you know, the people who were brave enough to be in this film deserve for it to be seen.
And what is the justification for not airing it or airing it in the middle of the night? Have you
know,
heard?
They don't tell us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the independent lens often takes on controversial topics. It's really such a well-respected, you know, multiple Emmy Award-winning series. And so in some places they don't air independent lens normally, but in this case, you know, abortion, South Carolina, for example, is a state that I know the funding entities for the state, their funding was threatened the last time they showed an abortion film. And so, you know, while I am sympathetic to folks at the station who want to keep their station funded, I find it outrageous that the same states who are passing these laws are also able to silence public media.
Don Porter's latest film is called Trapped. It looks at what happens when clinics that provide abortions are shut down or are threatened with closure. She spent 3 years in 6 clinics in Texas, Alabama, Mississippi. Her film gives a voice to clinic workers, doctors, lawyers, advocates, and the patients who are really suffering and trying to get a procedure that is legal in this country and pretty common. And the other thing, Dawn, that's really important to sort of step back and look at the big picture, a lot of these women are poor and of color.
That's right. You know, and that was something that was so interesting to me. You know, I'm African-American. Dr. Parker, who is the main character in the film, is African-American. And one of the things he explained to me very early on, which makes a lot of sense, is that these laws disproportionately impact low-income women of all races, but they really disproportionately impact low-income women of color, who are often people who are uninsured and who don't have other medical care options. You know, these state laws are not reaching people who can access an abortion from their OBGYN. You know, they are not regulated. It's only standalone clinics. And who's going to a standalone clinic? It's someone who doesn't have health care, where they need to pay cash for these procedures, which is another reason why it's very difficult when the procedure is pushed to second trimester. The cost doubles because it can be more complicated. So the racial and also just the poverty implications are astounding. So many of the women that I interviewed, whether they're on camera or off, were making this decision for economics. Mm. And one woman in particular, who will stay with me forever, was married. She had just gotten off of welfare. She had a 2-year-old. She had just gotten a job. She was like, it's such a great position in her life. She had an unplanned pregnancy, but she was in a loving, committed marriage, and she did want a second child. So she felt like the right thing to do for her was to have the abortion, even though it really was a wanted child. Mm. And, you know, those are heartbreaking choices, but that has to be her choice. And so to watch her as she was screamed at by protesters that she was a baby killer and a murderer was, you know, such insult to injury for this woman who was facing such a difficult life choice.
Dawn, we have about a minute or so left. At a time when we keep getting this legislation that goes further than the last piece of legislation, what's next? I mean, what can people do, especially out here in California, where we're actually increasing access? Yeah. One of the only states that's doing that.
You know, California is an interesting example, though, because at our local San Francisco screenings, a number of providers came up and said they are getting women from out of state, and they are facing a real, you know, an economic crisis because they're getting people who can't afford the procedure. They need clinic supporters. They still do get protesters. They need people to help drive people back and forth, and they really need funding because they're trying to keep the price at a level that's affordable. But there are fewer clinics. There's not a clinic in Berkeley. Hmm. You know, there are not as many clinics as folks think, and they're seeing an influx from these other states where access is being denied.
And we live in a big state, and in rural parts of the state, it's hard to get access.
That's right. So while we are in our, you know, San Francisco you know, but it accesses, I would call your local provider and ask them what they need.
Maybe we need to do a show specifically about that. So women from other states are coming to California because they can't get access they live.
Yes. A local provider here while we were in theaters in San Francisco came and just, you know, tip of the iceberg began to explain that the situation in California is not as safe as we would imagine.
Don Porter's new film is Trapped, and it looks at what happens when abortion clinics shut down or are threatened with closure. I hope you can see the film. It'll air on PBS's Independent Lens June 20th at 10 p.m. Don Porter, thank you so much for coming in again.
Thank you so much. I love the show, and I so appreciate you covering this. It's been really it's been so helpful. In fact, I spoke to a cab driver who said, I heard you on the radio.
Oh, that's great.
So,
we love our cab drivers.
I know. So they
thank you, Don.
To you.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And Don Porter is sticking around with us as we ask for your support. And I am here with Matt Martin, who has had an amazing morning. Hi, Matt.
It's been an incredible morning of support for local public radio. And really here on this last day of our May fundraiser, it needs to be. We're pushing towards our goal. We want to end this campaign on time. We've kept the programming intact. And we brought you important conversations like the one you've just heard between Rose and Dawn. This is the kind of conversation you make possible. And it is these moments, you know, when we say we come to you just twice a year, and then there's a day like this, the end of this campaign, where we want to push towards the goal so we can go back to doing the work that is so important to this community. We do it in partnership with you. And every person who calls or clicks makes a difference. Please do it now at 800-525-9917, kalw.org. Every single contribution brings us closer to this challenge in this hour to get 30 people to support KALW, $2,250 if we make it there. Already we've had 10 people give their support.
Thank you
so much. 800-525-9917.
All right. Thank you so much for your support. So we need 20 more clicks or calls on this last day of our campaign. We, as you know, are dedicated to doing shows about health and reproductive rights. And I know that you also support that kind of programming. Give us a call, 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or kalw.org. This is the second time we have brought Don Porter on to talk about this really important film. Don, talk about, as a filmmaker, talk about the role, the important role of independent radio in a station like KALW.
You know, I'm one of those people who has public radio on all the time, and I'm relatively new to the Bay Area. So it was such a fantastic way to immerse myself in the stories that were local as well as national. You know, I feel like it's just been an essential part of my moving kit to be here. But in addition to that, we live in a time where, you know, deep and thoughtful coverage. I mean, the research and the way that you are pulling out the nuance of this issue. Trap laws are a perfect example of something that's hard for mass media to understand. If you don't look beyond the headlines of these laws, you would not understand that this is happening in plain sight. And that's the kind of deep, thoughtful reporting that happens in independent media and independent radio. And so, you know, I know my folks are so grateful for it. I'm so grateful to be here. So I will go out and click.
All right. Thank you. And you can join Don by clicking at kalw.org and giving us a call at 800-525-9917. It's the last day of our campaign. As Matt said, we're having an amazing morning. Thank you for your support. And just to let you know how it works, Don spends 3 years of her life doing this documentary, probably more. And then we bring her on so she can share her ideas and share what she found. And that's how this works, and we can only do that with your support. 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org.
Thanks to Leslie Chow in Aptos, Blythe Risk in Oakland, Lindsay Sablosky in San Francisco, all of whom gave their support at kalw.org. In these last hours of this campaign, we're having something beautiful, and that is the phones ringing, the gifts coming in at kalw.org while we are not asking for your support. We keep the programming on the air, but it's actually not us, it's you. By making a call, getting involved, supporting this kind of in-depth conversation, supporting the commitment of Rose and her team to covering these issues, which, you know, let's face it, these are difficult stories to tell, let alone difficult issues to dive into. It's easy enough to go, you know what, let's not do that today. Rose and her team don't have that attitude. They say, these are some important things we want to follow through, we want to tell the difficult stories, and we want to talk about how together we find solutions. The number to call, 800-525-9917. If you value that, if you're ready to dig a little deeper to support this kind of journalism, this place on the airwaves in our community, do it now. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
800-525-9917 or KALW.org. With your support, we have the independence to really dig into these issues and spend an hour on these issues. We just told you about the breaking news out of Oklahoma. We told you what's happening in South Carolina. We're only able to do that with your support. 800-525-9917.
You know, I love, it's so important that this is also a conversation. You know, we saw from Judy's call, that was not something that I was really thinking about. I mean, when you're actually thinking about what happens when you turn to self-abortion, I mean, that is why this is so critical. You know, it's a political issue, but it's also a medical health issue. Some of the many things, you know, so important that we found is abortion access is also correlated to economic success. So one of the really fascinating things was a number of women wrote into the Supreme Court and said, I am a lawyer because I had an abortion. So what is happening here? By you doing this, not just once, but talking about this story twice and then continuing to do independent reporting is, you know, we are giving all of those women a voice and saying you are not alone, and your bravery, we're destigmatizing this conversation that's so common to so many people.
And we really need an open space where that conversation can happen, information can come forward, and we advance our thinking. I mean, that is